The following program is brought to you by Columbia Southern University. Visit columbiasouthern.edu.
It's good to be back on the air. I've had a couple months off, and my producer, John Mitchell, said, Billy, you got to come back kicking and screaming. And I said, I don't really have to kick and scream. I was waiting for the opportunity, and what a show I have lined up for us tonight as we enter back in. So I've got two special guests that I'll introduce in just a second, but tonight's show is, what do we want in a fire chief? Training, experience, or education. And trust me, in my years in the fire service, I've seen it all and been a part of it all. And I've also known where we've had 20-year firefighters with 1 year of experience, but then we've also seen fire chiefs who've come in who have tons of education, but had no clue how the nozzle even went on the end of the hose line. So we're going to talk about the balance tonight. It's kind of which came first, the chicken or the egg, and which is more important. So I've got two guests to line up on this, and I'll be writing an article that will be coming out on FireRescue1.com in the next week or so about this particular subject, because we've had some issues in the past. But I've got two great guests tonight. One of them is, both of them are near and dear friends of mine. The first is Chief Rich Marinucci, who's been on my show with me several times before. Chief Marinucci is the Chief of Northville Township up in Michigan, who they have actually been experiencing quite a few fires up there. If you've been watching the internet and the web, they've been quite busy. So it might have something to do with the cold temperatures, which unfortunately we are having to experience tonight here in Orange Beach, Alabama, where I'm coming to you live from. But Chief Marinucci has been there. He's a retired chief of Farmington Hills, and also he's a past president of the IASC, and also was a chief operating officer for the U.S. Fire Administration for a short time. My other guest, who moved from Arizona down to the beach here in Orange Beach, Alabama, and that is, I don't know whether to call him chief or doctor, so I call him Chief Doctor Scott Rounds. Dr. Rounds was the public safety director in Buckeye, Arizona, and as well as in Farmington, New Mexico, and he actually moved his way up to short stint as the city manager. And Dr. Rounds is now with Columbia Southern University as an assistant provost. He spent a short time, he spent quite a bit of time as one of our lead faculty in the fire science program, and then became the lead faculty for that, and now has moved up to assistant provost over the entire School of Emergency Services, which includes our criminal justice, fire, EMS, and emergency services management. So I have two great guests. Chief Marinucci, thanks for being with me tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
And Dr. Rounds, thanks for hanging out with us and spending your time this evening with us here in Orange Beach.
Well, this is time well spent. Thank you for having me.
So as we lead off, we're going to spend about 30 or 40 minutes discussing some of the things that have gone on. And the reason I chose the topic of this show is recently we saw in one of our southern states where a city administrator and the mayor and council had decided to choose a fire chief who lacked certifications, had experience, some experience, it was limited, but lacked certifications at the state level, selected this individual as the fire chief to lead the organization. And there were several firefighters and members of the organization who decided they didn't want to be a part of it. They protested, didn't like it, because they wanted the fire chief who had years of experience and training to lead the organization. The underlying issue was the city actually wanted somebody that knew how to run a business, which seems the fire service has evolved into. So as we begin off this show, Chief Marinucci, you have been, as the president of the IFC, worked your way through the ranks there as chief operating officer at the U.S. Fire Administration, and obviously spent a lot of time at the National Fire Academy, which is where I first met you many years ago. You know, I want to pitch this first to you. What are your thoughts on which is more important in the fire service in today's fire chief?
That's just such a great debatable topic, if you will. And, you know, I think it comes down to a combination of all the above, again, depending upon the circumstances of each individual community and organization. I think externally, if you want to compete and get the resources that are necessary to run an operation, you certainly need education and some level of experience to do that. As just another department head in a particular community, you have a whole lot of other department heads that are educated. And if you want to be able to compete for resources in the city manager's meeting or the town manager's meeting or the mayor's meeting or whatever, you certainly need to have that credential to lend you credibility. So, you know, if you look at it from a perspective, the chief's job primarily is to get resources for the organization. Their job then is how are you best able to do that? So it's about, okay, how do I take care of my firefighters if I can't get the right tools and the right resources to prepare them to go to a fire? So I need those capabilities, if you will. But on the flip side, if you look internal to a department, I think in many ways the fire service has a certain uniqueness in that they want their fire chief to have some level of street credibility, which means that some point in time you have to demonstrate that you went to a fire or you know, you got dirty or you got your gear dirty or whatever that method is to punch your card. So sometimes that's why it may have to be that little bit of that combination, why it's so important for firefighters as they're going up through the ranks to get the education so they have a blend of credentials, if you will. So they have the credentials that are going to help externally where all the resources generally exist, and then, of course, certain things that they have to do to be respected inside the department.
So, and you've made some wonderful points there, so I'm going to toss it over to Dr. Rounds. And, you know, you served a short stint as a city manager when you were in Farmington, I believe, and when you were there as a city manager role, what were some things that you would look at when you were looking for individuals who were sitting at the table with you, when you were looking at those executives? Because whether you're at a city or a county, wherever it may be, you're looking for decision makers sitting around the table. You know, what's the most important thing you're looking at for those individuals, and what can they bring to the table?
Well, that's a great question, and what happens is it's really about data-filled, driven society. And when you're working with council, you're working at that level, you're working at the city management level with all your directors, you need the best information you can get. You need to know that what's brought to you makes sense and that you can bank on, because you're about to go into a political arena that there's not a lot of sometimes there's not a lot of second chances. So when you step into it, it's the real game. And so when you're talking to your fire chief, you want them to be educated. And quite frankly, when you look across the table and you see a very educated police chief, you start wondering, well, why wouldn't I want that? I want the best that I can get. From my perspective, that they're bringing to me, I know they know the budget. I know they know strategic planning. I know what's going on in the firehouse. I know they're safe, and I rely on those metrics. Quite frankly, that's what's going to make it work. And so that educated chief, really, as they come up through the ranks, it's really in the eye of the beholder. You have people that are going to look. Some of the fire unions want a specific chief. I know that. You have firefighters on very, very busy apparatus. They think of something different. Slower fire departments, maybe one that's a little bit smaller, would want something different. But I would tell you, from the city management point of view, you rely on that. You bank on that. That's a political deal between the police, fire, those two departments sitting next to you. You bank on those metrics and that data, and it has to come in, and they have to be smart.
So, Dr. Rounds, you've come up with something that's really important. And when we talk about the U.S. Fire Administration and their logo and the Eagle, Hotfoot, one of the stars that surrounds that is about data and data collection. When when we talk about data, and I want to throw this back to Chief Marinucci because he certainly served in a role with the U.S. Fire Administration. When we look at data as a fire chief or as a municipality, a fire board, or a county, or even at the national level, what does data bring to the table when you're a fire chief?
Well, again, that's that educational component that we're talking about, and Scott brings up some great points about from a city manager perspective, and I just want to address that as we get into, you know, how the data fits in. But if you're in a small organization that's maybe struggling with having enough personnel to do that, and you have very limited resources, you're not likely to get them. You're in a rural area, not a large tax base, whatever it might be. You may need that fire chief. His primary goal in that case is to respond to call, and there are certainly organizations like that. But I think if you're looking at a little bit more sophistication, if you will, in the organization where you're competing for more resources, then I think that education becomes critical, and that's where we lead into the data piece. And again, everybody's always looking for a silver bullet that's going to fix everybody's problem with one particular sentence, but it's always such a combination. And the managers today are obviously more educated too. They're getting sharper. They're getting fed information from a lot of different sources, and they're requiring that data input. Okay, so they're saying, in order for me to give you more resources, you're going to have to prove to me that you actually need those resources. And so the data becomes extremely important from a business perspective, if you will. Now, the balance comes in that, as you all know, we are in an emotional business. When, Chief Brunicini says, Mrs. Smith calls, she's having an emotional event, and the entire event is all about that perspective. She doesn't really care about the statistics or the data or anything else that's going on. She just knows she's having a bad day. She dialed 911, and she's expecting somebody to fix that. And if you do that very, very well, then you're going to get the support from the citizenry if you can consistently do that. So you're going to have that political pressure that's going to support the data. But when you do get into those meetings where, again, the police chief, he's got great data. I mean, he can tell you when crimes are committed, what time of day, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, we get our fire stats and we don't have the same level of sophistication in our data if we're not collecting it. So you sit in a meeting then and now there's a limited, finite amount of money that the city manager and the elected officials have to divvy up amongst all their departments who are, and everyone's their favorite. So they've got to divvy it up. Now, if you've got one or two or three of the department heads that are prepared and have data to support their budgetary requests, and you have another one who has nothing, it's not hard to figure out who's going to end up getting the bulk of the resources, because without that, you can only go so far.
So, Dr. Rounds, I'll throw it back over to you to follow up with what Chief Marinucci has said. Any additional input on that?
Well, the other side of the coin, and as a fire chief, you come to recognize that you can only do with what your resources allow you to do in the name of safety. Safety's huge. And so in this day and age, and in past decades, we know what safety is for firefighting. And so when you come in from an experienced fire chief point of view, and you have education or you understand the data, you're able to sit in that arena and you're able to have that discussion. This is what we have, and this is what we're able to do with the manpower. You look at the national standards or NFPA standards, and these are the suggestions. And so as you're sitting in that arena, you want to have the right manpower. You want to have the right tools. Or if this is what you're giving me, then this is what we can do. Maybe we end up being a defensive strategy fire department because this is the best we can do. We can save the house next to it. We can save the structures. We can do these things. But what's on fire, you have to be able to sit in that position with the data and the standards and the experience. Do not put your firefighters at risk, and you have that discussion. And that is a hard discussion to have without that education piece. You have to be able to drive it.
So, you know, one of the things that I would point out is when it comes to data and how we present the data. You know, we have so many fire chiefs who, when they do annual reports or if they do annual reports to their mayor and council, county commissioners, their fire board, they tend to talk about what their fire loss was because they look at, well, we need more resources. We got to have more resources. We need more stations. We need more personnel. We need more companies to respond. And that's not second-guessing any of that. It's very accurate in so many cases, so many locales and jurisdictions across the country. But, you know, I recently did a class, and I said that, you know, the fire service needs to be marketeers. The fire chief needs to be the chief marketing officer as well, because when it comes to data, they need to know the data. They need to be a spokesperson, be able to relay that data to where they understand not only what their fire loss is, and too many times you see, all right, we responded to 1,200 responses this year, and we had almost $1 million in fire loss. Okay, well, today's fire chief has to be data-driven. Both Chief Marinucci and Dr. Rounds, you have said how important data is, but we haven't really trained today's fire chief to be able to understand how to articulate that importance of that data to say, you know what, here we have $1 million in fire loss, but because we have our units or our stations properly placed, the number of people we properly have, the apparatus, the water systems, the communication systems, because of that, we have an ISO rating of this versus it being, let's say, a 3 or a 4 versus it being a 7 or 8. So, you know, we have savings on our insurance. We were able to protect, yeah, we had $1 million in loss, but we actually saved $12 million in loss just in property itself. But not only that, if they're businesses, well, those businesses didn't close because we were there. They continued to generate sales tax, and they had shoppers and consumers there. Or we had residential properties that didn't burn to the ground and create blight to the neighborhood. We were able to stop it, and the family was still there, and they lived in the community versus the house burning down. They moved somewhere else, and we got a vacant lot. And so we do bring value, and I ask the question so many times, and we just actually here on the campus at Columbia Southern University last week had an incident safety officer class because we're a regional training site for the Alabama Fire College. And I presented it to those attendees who were in the incident safety officer class. Do you think you're a money pit or a black hole? Does your mayor and council think that? And as we had that discussion and I presented this topic to them, so many of them said, you know, we've never thought of it that way. We've never thought that, yeah, we do bring value to the community. But it goes back to data and research and how we present it and being a marketing agent. So, you know, there's... we have to get better at it. You said it. Chief Marinucci said it. You see so many police chiefs who've progressed through the ranks and become a police chief. They're city managers or administrators, county managers, because they've acquired education. But they know how to articulate data. They know how to do research. They know how to use data to their benefit. So we haven't done very well to that. And we're getting ready to go to a break. And when I come back, I understand we have a special guest who's called in with us, Dr. Burt Clark, who we all know from the National Fire Academy, who's a big prevention guru. And so we're going to bring Dr. Clark into the discussion. We're going to go to a break because I was just recently out in San Diego, California, and Dr. Clark and I he sat in my class and I sat in his, and we had a similar discussion of that. So we're going to go to a break. Again, this is Stop, Drop, and Roll with the Punches. I want to remind you, if you want to call in and be a part of the program tonight, you can call in at 855-345-4723. You can call in and speak with us live tonight, and we'd love to have you on. So with that, we're going to go to a break. John, take us to a break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes with Dr. Burt Clark.
Fire Weekly Radio, the weekly podcasts which address issues important to firefighters and first responders all across America. Whether career or volunteer, urban or rural, veteran or probie, join us each week for an interactive chat just like we enjoy every day around the firehouse kitchen table. For a complete lineup of upcoming shows as well as a full library of previous programs, visit fireweekly.com.
Life is complicated, but your education shouldn't be. At Columbia Southern University, we'll make sure of it.
We offer quality online programs, low-cost tuition, textbooks at no cost, and caring faculty and staff to help ease the transition of going back to school. We'll be here to support you every step of the way, from application to graduation.
We also offer financial savings through our scholarship opportunities and learning partnership programs.
Your success is our success.
So join the CSU family, and together we can achieve your dreams.
I'm your host, Billy D. Hayes. Again, we have with us tonight our special guest, Chief Rich Marinucci from Northville Township, Michigan. I almost said Washington, but I know Washington's a little bit different from Michigan. And then we have Dr. Scott Rounds, who's with us here on campus in Orange Beach, Alabama. So we have a caller who's called in. We're proud to have him on because he's been a long-time friend of ours and certainly one of my mentors, Dr. Bert Clark. So, Dr. Clark, we welcome you to the show. So tell us what your thoughts are.
Hi, Billy. Hey, thanks for having me on. Hopefully I'm not butting in. I really called in to listen because I thought the topic was very interesting. And as you know, something that's been was important in my career because that's really what the Fire Academy was all about, you know, increasing that professionalism of the nation's fire service and others engaged in fire prevention control activity. So I've really dedicated, you know, most of my adult career to accomplishing that. And certainly the fire chief is the individual that's mostly responsible for that, right? And that's really what the Fire Academy was created for, one of the principal reasons. So I've thought about this topic for a long time. And, this is going to sound like heresy from an educator, but you know, I don't know what the answer is in terms of experience or education or how many fires you're going to, and the reason I'm confused about that is because I don't know that we as a society have really decided how do we measure the success of the fire service. So how do we know if the fire chief is doing a good job if we can't say, yes, the fire service is doing a good job and society is addressing, you know, our fire problem? And I kind of think we've been stuck for the last century in terms of how we've answered that question. For the 20th century, I think We've thought of fire protection basically as a manual fire protection model, meaning that a bunch of people have to get on something or run to wherever the fire is and then try to fix it. Well, that's like, you know, chasing the horse after they got out of the barn. And we're still basically doing that. We do a good job at it. We do it well, and we measure all those kinds of things. So however the fire chief can convince his elected officials and the citizen that, hey, we're doing that really well. We're doing the best we possibly can with the resources that you give us to come to your fire. That's what everybody thinks fire protection is. So, but what I'm getting to is I think in the 21st century, we need to change that model from a manual fire protection model to an automatic fire protection model. Because we know that, you know, built-in fire protection is much more efficient and effective than a manual fire protection model. So, you know, if we keep trying to, you know, rebuild the vacuum tube TV, you know, we never get to the microchip and a new way of communicating. So on a big, you know, macro level, that's kind of what's been rolling around in my mind. So I'll be quiet now.
know, your input is dead on. And one of the things that I've been thinking about is when I first saw the article come out and the debate about what was going on in the state where firefighters were upset, and it wasn't so much the article, it was the blogs and the comments that followed after that and the debate that raged on is, well, we don't care about education. We need a fire chief with experience and who has training and certifications because they're the only true ones that know what we want. But then there were just as equally as many that said, no, you know what, the fire chief's not the one that needs to be on the nozzle, not the one running the fire ground. The fire chief needs to be the individual who is providing the resources and setting the standards for what our organization is going to be. Again, it goes back to what comes first, the chicken or the egg. I think that what you have done over the years, and it's just kind of a joint effort with this group, and I'm so honored to have everybody on, with Chief Marinucci and his participation and development of Chief Fire Officer designation, involvement with the Center for Public Safety Excellence, and Dr. Clark, your number of years with the National Fire Academy and inception of the Executive Fire Officer Program, certainly Dr. Rounds, who's progressed his career from a firefighter all the way to a doctor, and you as well, who started at Washington, D.C., which I miss immensely and serve in my short time there, and myself as an executive fire officer. You know, I've seen where I think we all need it together, but I agree with what you're saying, Dr. Clark, in having some type of automatic system in place and not waiting to find out what exactly we need. So I want to throw something over to Chief Marinucci. When we talk about the certainly the education piece, when we talk about training, how important is it as a chief officer like you are yourself, and then as your position with the fire administration, specifically with chief fire officer designation, what role does that play today in today's fire chief?
Well, I think it's about lending credibility and establishing credentials to get your foot in the door. Yeah, there's things that you can do internal to your department, but we don't operate as an island. And so I have to be able to relate to the citizenry, the business community, the special interest groups, my elected officials. I also have to deal with elected officials at a county level, a state level, and to some extent on a federal level. And they really... they may be say something that I've been to a couple of fires or whatever it is, but they're looking at the rest of my credentials. They're looking at the educational component and so forth, which allows me, you know, the secret handshake, if you will, into their world, which is the people that ultimately control the resources. But you know, Dr. Clark brings up some excellent points that are, I think, are philosophical in nature, and we haven't figured out how to do this because. And why I say that is, wherever I've gone, I don't see a lot of outrage from the community when there's a fire. And I'll give you a simple example. Just recently, in the last couple of weeks, in my own community, a couple of weeks ago, we had a fire in a senior citizen building. 6 o'clock in the morning, a woman that lived there had a fire started on her couch. She didn't have her hearing aid in yet, but she was awake, so she noticed the fire, tried to put it out, couldn't do it, so she left the building. Of course, the alarm's going off, so the help comes up. By the time the help from the building comes up, the automatic sprinkler activates and extinguishes the fire. There's zero coverage in the media, zero feedback from any of the people that are my bosses, in essence, although we brought it to their attention and so forth and so on, but very little interest in that particular fire. Now, without the sprinkler system, I believe that woman would have been seriously hurt because she was elderly, and that is one of the risk groups. She would not have easily been able to escape. And the fact that the rest of the folks in that particular building would have been in danger, too. Anybody that's ever been involved with trying to evacuate a lot of senior citizens understands what the challenges are from that. Now, if you fast forward a week to 10 days later, we have a fire at 6 o'clock in the morning, and before we even get there, the news helicopter has footage of it going end to end. And so So all the reporters come out and cover it. Every major media outlet in the Metro Detroit area is covering this because of, you know, the time of day, the footage that's coming from the news helicopter. And, of course, you know, so I'm talking to a lot of different reporters about a failure, and all of a sudden we're getting much better publicity, if you will, about our fire department for what probably society-wise would be classified as a failure. You've had a building burn down, and the success that we experienced, you know, a couple of weeks prior has zero ramifications. So I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but I think that's more than just a fire department, but that's almost societal of what gets covered, what doesn't, and so forth.
You know, funny you say that, because we all admire our dear friend Chief Alan Brunicini, and one thing I always remember is Chief Brunicini saying, people will die according to code. And when you have those situations where codes don't apply, specifically the first one where the sprinkler system was there, if that sprinkler system wasn't there nor wasn't required, you were exactly dead on that something tragic could have happened there. You probably would have had the same level of media coverage because you had a fire fatality versus one that, you know, where you had fires, flames visible. So I think you're spot on with your interpretation of that, of what Dr. Clark was saying earlier. Dr. Rounds, I'm going to throw it over to you and ask the question, you know, when we have these individuals, when you have organizations that say, well, experience and training are more important than education, and certainly you now work in the education industry as the provost over our fire and emergency services, you know, there's obviously a place for training and experience and where it fits in. How do they all correlate with one another? What's the combination? We're trying to find the balance. And, you know, I think we've all been with individuals where education is so far to one way where they've had an education, but yet, you know, the fire ground experience didn't work, and they didn't have trust of the crews that followed them. And then there was those individuals that they had so much training and experience, or that's all they've done and had little to no education, but yet didn't know how to manage a budget, lost their positions because of HR issues or budgetary issues, which in the particular cases I mentioned earlier, there was a problem where they had a budget shortfall and the city had to bail them out. And basically, the city said, you know what, we can't keep doing this. We got to put in somebody that knows how to manage a budget. What is the right combination on your what you see?
Well, the right combination, as Dr. Clark and Rich, we've been sitting here talking about it all night long. We're talking about leadership, all right? And so it's the leadership of an educated leader, an experienced leader that you're able to bring together for your community, and you recognize how to lead that community, because you're going to be upstairs. You're going to be in a senior staff situation with city managers and council. It is political, and there was a day and time that politics didn't play. Well, guess what? You're going to be a politician. You're going to be having meetings before the meetings and meetings after the meetings, and that's just the way that's going to go. It's going to take courage to stand up to one or the other, depending on what it is you're fighting for at that particular time. If you know you need more sets and reps, you need to have that training facility, you need to get the money for it, you better be educated, have the data to demonstrate that. On the other end, you're looking at politicians saying, look, you know what, in the long run, there are very successful models that are out there that you can bring in from experience, from education, and the courage to do that would be, say, a Scottsdale, Arizona, where they have a fire sprinkler, residential fire sprinkler ordinance that's been in place for a number of decades. So the answer, as crazy as it is, but it's all that piece, but it's a leadership piece. And so, like in at Columbia Southern University, at the National Fire Academy, that was always stressed. It was always stressed taking that leadership role, recognizing how to carry yourself, who you're representing, and what you're bringing forward to make that difference. And you got to go in prepared. It's not a case of going by the seat of your pants. I've been the fire chief here for X number of years, so you know I'm part of the system. That may have worked, you know, yesteryear, but in today's today's society, it makes a difference. It makes a difference going in prepared, and you know you have a target, and you're representing all sides of the community.
So we talked a lot about data and research, which all three of my dear friends and mentors and guests tonight have all alluded to, and I'm going to take it off of just budgets and running a fire department organization for just a moment, because it all ties in to when we talk about research, it has to do with our organizations and how important the men and women who serve in our organization and serve across this country, what they mean to their local communities, because we are all very close to the National Fallen Firefighter Foundation, and you know, we cry when there's an event that occurs, we lose one of our brothers and sisters. And knowing the research and how to complete data or how to conduct research and know the data that occurs, and of course Chief Marinucci, as close as he is with the Fire Department Safety Officers Association, and then Dr. Clark, obviously working on campus and being as close as he is to the National Fallen Firefighter Foundation. Dr. Rounds, your son was heavily involved in the 19 firefighters that were lost out in Arizona. Was it last year, I believe?
Yes, sir.
So we understand the importance of firefighter safety. You know, we have a lot of studies that are going on right now, and I want to take out just the fire chief, and I know this show is about what we want in a fire chief, but what do we want in an officer, in a not only an officer, but in a firefighter? When we have a firefighter that walks in the door, they're no longer just a high school graduate. We have firefighters coming to our organizations now with undergraduate degrees and master degrees. They understand research and data. And what we're seeing with NIST and what we're seeing with the changes in how we've done, and obviously there's resistance to say, by God, you can't put a fire out from standing out in the yard and spraying it through the window. You just can't do it, which we know you can. And I remember 20-some years ago when we said 1 gallon of water converts to 1,700 gallons of steam, and you could put a lot of fire out with a little bit of water, but somehow we have to immerse ourselves in the middle of it. And we continue to do that. Not only that, but to read the NIOSH reports and conduct data to say, okay, here's recommendations of firefighter fatality after firefighter fatality, where the same thing continues to happen again and again and again, and we're not breaking that cycle. So I'm throwing you a softball, Dr. Clark, because you've got a new book that you've just written that's out on the market right now, and I'd love to for you to give us a couple minutes and talk about that as we begin to wrap up this show tonight.
Well, I appreciate that, Billy. I certainly didn't call in to push my book, but I will at the end of this little commentary, just as if I think, just the statement I made about the fire service in the 20th century being basically a manual fire protection model needing to change to an automatic fire protection model, I think all of our doctrine, in other words, all the stuff that we do and teach, has been basically based on experience and consensus. And because of that, every fire department thinks they do it the right way. So every fire department rates themselves as number one. So if everybody's number one, there's no reason to change anything, and there's no good science to say, no, you're not number one, you're number 10. So I think for the 21st century, the fire service needs to become science and research-based. So again, that's a major paradigm shift in how we think about ourselves. But we're used to it. This is the other example I give. Every firefighter in the country does CPR the exact same way, and they've changed how they do it many, many times if they've been in the department more than 5 or 10 years, and they never push back. Well, why is that? Because the MDs, the medical doctors, based on their science and research, changed how we behaved in terms of doing CPR because they realized that way wasn't the best way. The new way is a better way. So that's one example of a profession, is that it's willing to change its behavior based on the new science and research, and then everybody does it the new way. But we're not there. We're still dragging our feet we still can't get them to put their seatbelt on. I mean, how much more fundamental can you get than that? But if we, so talk about science and research, we still have people not wearing a seatbelt. We still have state laws that exempt firefighters from wearing their seatbelts. How is that even possible today? Why is the fire service and society not completely upset with that phenomenon when we know the science and research is, hey, physics is the same whether you're in your small car or your fire truck. And you see wrecks all the time. We're getting better, but we're still not having all of our seatbelts on. So, but we don't teach science and research. There's, you know, in rookie school, heck, we didn't even teach them to read and write in rookie school, much less about science. So we need to change that whole phenomenon. So from the rookie to the fire chief, when they think about stuff, they want to say, okay, show me the science behind this. Not just because the big city says do it that way, not just because NFPA says to do it that way, not just because I feel like doing it that way. There's got to be some science and research behind it. And then we all have to do it the same way. So we get some field experience, which is called, you know, clinical trials, to see if it really does work that way when we do it with the masses. So, you know, I don't know if that answered your question or not about that phenomenon, but if the fire chief needs to be the lead scientist, if you will, on his organization. He needs to understand that data set. He needs to be able to talk in those kinds of discussions to explain to his elected officials the science behind why he wants to do what he wants to do, not just because we've always done it that way. You know, I wrote an article, you know, not long ago, says, you know, one thing that every fire department reports out is it's average response time. Well, somebody show me where really average response time really makes any difference. We use it to justify getting more fire trucks and more people, but then when we get there and the victims are dead already, we say, well, we got there within our average response time, so it's not our responsibility. So, you know, why don't fire departments report out the percentage of homes that have working smoke detectors or the percentage of buildings that have working sprinkler systems? Those two pieces of information are probably more important than your average response time. So, you know, those are some pretty challenging kind of things, but you can't be afraid of the science. And I think sometimes we are when it disagrees with our own gut-level feeling stuff.
You hit on something that Chief Marinucci was talking about is what a success story we had in his township where they had somebody survive because they had a residential sprinkler system. And I can tell you in Washington, D.C., and Dr. Clark, you know this because you were there, and certainly when I left there in 2010, every day there were engine companies responding to high-rises where they had fires, but the sprinkler system extinguished the fire before they long ever got there, and it was more of a basic clean-up, mop-up operation. It wasn't fun. It wasn't sexy. It wasn't what they were hired on to do, but the building stood, the people lived, and possessions were saved, and you're right. You're dead on. We haven't got to that point. Now, we can drop back to all my fire porn articles because that's not what we're culturing the nation's fire service to be, which kind of goes back to the whole point of tonight's show is the fire chief is, you know, we have changed and we're a different fire service today. We need to be knowledgeable. We need to have experience. We need to have training. But as I said, when we opened the show, I've known a lot of 20-year firefighters with 1 year experience. They go through recruit school and that's the end of their career. They sit on a company somewhere for 19 more years and never go to another class. And today's fire chief, and I want to toss it back to Chief Marinucci as we're wrapping up, you know, the chief fire officer designation, executive fire officer, master degree levels, you know, Chief Marinucci, what do you see, and I want to toss this around as we wrap up, what are you seeing on your level of what's expected of today's fire chief?
Well, it the expectations are much greater than they've ever been. We're expected to perform much more professionally from somebody else's definition of a professional. which is might be different than what a lot of people in the fire service think the professional is. And it really is about the, you know, people having different expectations for job performance. And of course, we may have our own internal measurements, if you will, as Dr. Clark was talking about response times and those sorts of things. The external forces are asking other statistical measurements, like how much money are we spending per fire, or what's the cost of particular things, that to be able to explain that, at least in their language, not just your language, it's not quite as simple to say, well, stuff's going to burn down, so therefore you need to give me everything I need, when they're asking much more detailed questions than that. So the preparation for those that are going to be successful has to increase. So you have to look at what do you want to develop in your own fire department or the fire service, okay? If we look at it from a very simplistic perspective, every fire that's ever been started has been put out with or without the assistance of the fire department, okay? Whether you show up or not, eventually it's going to run out of fuel and something's going to happen. Now, how much damage is done in the meantime, that's what it's about. Now, where do you want to capture those fires that are going to start? We'd certainly like to prevent them all, but we know that that's probably not going to happen realistically. So something's going to start. So what's an acceptable level? And I think that starts to drive it. If you're okay burning down one or two buildings in your community a year, you can get by with a very inexpensive fire department and very little fire codes and very little fire prevention, et cetera. But if your expectation is that you don't want to have a lot, and one of the examples you can look at is down in Reedy Creek, down at Disney. They don't want to have any fires there. And so they've invested a tremendous amount of time and energy and effort in their fire prevention efforts. And you certainly don't see too much fire activity in Disneyland or Disney World across the board. So you've got an example there where somebody has decided that having a fire is not good for business. And they've done everything they possibly can. And I think if you look at their record, you'll find that it's extremely successful, especially compared to comparable. I mean, they're the equivalent of, you know, a city that has a million people going through it every day, or half a million, whatever their attendance is. But the percentage of fire loss in that particular community, which is attributable to their building codes, their sprinklers, their alarm systems, their fire prevention, their inspections, and all the things that they contribute. But that's the expectation, is to not have a fire in that particular community. So if you don't have that same direction, you're probably not going to get what you need to make that happen. And they still have firefighters there, and they know they still have to respond, and they're going to be there too. So it's not eliminating the need to have firefighters, because they still have a fire every so often. But compare it to any place else, and you can see how effective it can be.
So, and I appreciate you giving me that information, because it jumps right into what I'm going to ask Dr. Rounds to close out his piece with. You know, here at Columbia Southern University, and certainly with any school, and you know, he and I both work at CSU, and Chief Marinucci's on the advisory board for our fire administration program. But, you know, when we're looking at what today and tomorrow's fire chief looks like, obviously education plays into it, and certainly we can talk about training, experience, and all the things that you can be a part of. What are some degree programs like that we offer in the city manager seat? Put yourself in the city manager seat. What would you be looking for degree-wise that you would want your fire chief and or police chief to possess? And I know that's a different thing, but let's talk about the fire chief.
Well, all the reasons we've been talking about all this evening, we want a fire chief that can demonstrate that ability to learn, that ability to assimilate and produce and be part of the team. So we have, really depends on, so I'll start with, you have all sizes of departments. And education, I know that they're expecting associate degrees, which we offer, which build you into the bachelor degrees. Some places, as we start getting stronger, we have master degrees in leadership, MBAs. It's all about being able to think and make sense of what you read, make sense of what's going on, and perform. And so we start bringing these type of degree programs together, along with the NFA was fantastic. And that's where I started. It really got me excited about education coming on over. So CSU offers those, and it's certainly at a pace that anyone can do while they're at work. It's the remote learning. It's online. But what that does allow you to do is, you're bringing in, you're studying the NIOSH cases. You're studying all these different things because we know if we don't, history will repeat itself, and it doesn't need to, right? So if we can learn, if we can grasp what's out there, a city manager needs that. A city manager needs to know that their fire chief is sound and steady and has respect of the troops, is keeping them safe, and is bringing me information that we can go to council with, because it's all about taking care of Mrs. Smith. And that's going to take that type of education to do that, and certainly CSU offers those programs.
And two of our graduate programs that we offer, one obviously is the Master's in Organizational Leadership, which really well-rounds you in leading and whatever position you may have. We just recently, last year, added the Master's in Public Administration, which most city managers have that degree themselves. So, if you're looking at government, nonprofit-type work, obviously that's one that fits in. On the police side, they've been doing that for years. So on the law enforcement, they get their criminal justice degrees, and they move into it. Obviously, with the three of us, with Chief Marinucci and yourself and I, being a part of the Executive Officer Program, and Dr. Clark being one of the pioneers in developing and being a part of that for so long, those degree programs at the National Fire Academy, and for our listeners tonight who either have or have not been to the National Fire Academy, those classes are developed and are very rigorous, but developed with the mindset that they can eventually transfer into course credit, which, for example, the Executive Fire Officer Program, which are four classes, that's 12 credit hours that will transfer into many schools, not just Columbia Southern,
right,
but others. So you're already working, so the question, what comes first, the chicken or the egg, if you can develop yourself and develop a career development plan, and how I want to train myself and the training classes I go to, I'm almost simultaneously working on my college degree without even knowing it, because Fire Officer 3 classes, Fire Officer 4 classes, Incident Safety Officer classes, which Columbia Southern has partnered with the Fire Department Safety Officers Association, you take that class and you test out, well, that transfers into three course credits. So, they merge themselves together. So I want to thank for all of you. You're all dear and near friends to me and certainly mentors for me. I consider all three of you. I've learned from you and Chief Marinucci, who's a very near and dear friend, and Dr. Clark, who I was honored to not only know at the National Fire Academy, but to be able to wear the same patch at D.C. Fire Department, knowing that he called in to be a part of the show. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you spending your evening with me tonight on this subject. So you've given me some content to finish out the article for Fire Rescue 1, and certainly I'm going to continue to pick your brains on that. But I can't go without Dr. Clark. I threw you a softball pitch just a moment ago. So if you could, real quick, tell us how we can get your book, the name of your book, where we can get it at and locate it. I'm not going to end the show without us doing a sales pitch for you, sir.
Thank you very much, Billy. The title of the book is I Can't Save You, But I'll Die Trying, The American Fire Culture. It's available at Premium Press America. Just type that in online. Or you can call toll-free 800-981-7323. It's over 300 pages. And basically, it's a collection of 45 of my essays that I've written over the time period. And it really is my attempt to change the fire culture, if you will. So it's not just written for the fire service. I'm hoping that you can go to any bookstore sometime and get a copy. So your city manager should read a copy. Your elected officials should read a copy. Your the community leader should read a copy, because I think we need to start having these kind of discussions with that population. We need to have a different dialogue with them, and if we really want to change that culture. We can't do it ourselves. We need to lead the fight, but they need to help us get there, and hopefully this book will make a little contribution to that area. So again, thank you very much for the opportunity, and stay tuned. Good things to come. Thanks, Billy.
Dr. Clark, thanks for calling in. I appreciate all you've done and all you've provided me. Chief Marinucci, thank you for being a dear friend and a mentor to me and helping me guide along and then being a part of the show this evening.
My pleasure, sir.
And Dr. Rounds, as always, appreciate you spending your evening with me, hanging out here with me in my office as we're doing this show live from Orange Beach, Alabama tonight, where it was warm this morning at 73 degrees, and now it's down in the upper 30s. So I know that doesn't mean very much to Dr. Clark up in Maryland, nor does it to Chief Marinucci up in Michigan, because I hear it's a little bit cooler up there. So, John Mitchell, I appreciate you being our producer tonight, sir. You can close us out again. This has been Stop, Drop, and Roll with the Punches. I'm your host, Billy D. Hayes. We'll have this show edited, and it will be available for archive and download probably by tomorrow. So, John, take us home, sir.